they are crucial to helping people be able to readjust to our communities.
The ACLU alleges the state is not respecting early release dates for prisoner programs. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, February 23rd. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, the potential fallout from a lawsuit over access to abortion pills.
Alaskans are already so limited in their access to even getting reproductive health care.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Parents go to great lengths to protect their little ones. When it comes to protection from childhood diseases, go with the safest, most effective choice. Start strong by getting all recommended vaccines for your baby by age 2. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. That's vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
The American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska sued the State Department of Corrections today over a rights issue affecting certain people in state custody. The specific legal matter is a bit down in the weeds, but has big impacts on how prepared someone is for life outside of prison. Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea reports.
When someone serves time in Alaska's prisons, they'll hit certain milestones as they approach their release date. And they'll become eligible for things like work release, electronic monitoring, and rehab programs. Parole boards often grant earlier release dates, but the ACLU says the Department of Corrections won't recognize those new dates for eligibility purposes for these programs.
They are crucial to helping people be able to readjust to our communities and to be successful once they're released.
That's ACLU Legal Director Ruth Botstein speaking at a news conference on Thursday. The ACLU is representing four men caught up in the technicality: Jace Frankson, Jeffrey Mathis, Jonathan Walker, and Sababu Hadari. They've each served more than 20 years of their decades-long sentences and were each granted parole, moving their release dates up. But the Corrections Department has told them that based on their original release dates, they are ineligible for the transition programs. ACLU prison investigator Jacqueline Shepard recounted a conversation she had with one of the men.
I've been behind bars my entire adult life. I have no idea how to open a bank account. I don't know how to use a computer. And I've never really had an apartment or adult responsibility. I can't qualify for any community-based programs that would help me transition slowly into society. I feel like they're purposefully setting me up to fail.
Of the named plaintiffs, Frankson has the earliest release date set for August 9th, 2024. Botstein called the department's interpretation of the eligibility rules irrational and arbitrary. The organization is asking the court to assert that the Department of Corrections is violating due process and equal protection rights, and to order the department to give the plaintiffs and others like them access to transition programs. A spokesperson for the department said in an email late Thursday morning that she was not yet aware of the lawsuit. She forwarded a request for comment to the State Department of Law, which has not yet responded, though the state generally does not comment on current litigation. The ACLU says the state has 40 days to respond in court. In Anchorage, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Earlier this month, the state joined a lawsuit that could pull the abortion pill from the shelves. If it succeeds, doctors and advocates say it will further limit rural Alaskans' access to reproductive health care. KTOO's Claire Strumpel has the story.
Bristel Larson lives in Dillingham. 20 years ago, she became pregnant.
I was very early on in my pregnancy and knew in my heart that I was not going to be a mom.
She worked seasonal jobs that required physical labor, jobs she couldn't manage pregnant or with an infant. She chose to have an abortion. She had to travel to Anchorage, one of only three cities in the state that offers them. She said a medical abortion, known as the abortion pill, wasn't an option for her at that time because she didn't live close enough to Anchorage. Her doctor didn't want to send her hundreds of miles back to Dillingham where they couldn't check on her. But she said she could see some benefits.
I think it might have been less traumatic for physically and not having to go through the, you know, putting on the gown and going through the whole rigmarole.
That was almost 20 years ago, but the trip would be the same today. More than a quarter of people who seek abortions in Alaska travel more than 30 miles for care, according to Planned Parenthood. Abortion is legal in Alaska, but doctors and advocates say it's not equitable or accessible because of the state's geography and large rural population. And some say the lawsuit the state joined could limit access even further. Doctors say mifepristone is the most effective abortion pill on the market. The lawsuit would make sure it was no longer available. Dr. Robin Holmes is a primary care provider in Homer. She's concerned about the direction the legal system is moving when it comes to medicine.
The overall implication is that politicians took away physicians' rights to prescribe medications that are safe and effective for purely political reasons.
The clinic where Holmes works does not provide abortions or prescribe abortion pills. It offers sexual and reproduction care and education for people of all income levels in the southern part of the Kenai Peninsula. Abortion is protected in the state's constitution through the right to privacy, but Holmes said that it can be hard to find care that feels private in small towns in Alaska.
Alaskans are already so limited in their access to even getting reproductive health care as far as STI screenings or long-acting contraceptive options. What we don't need is to have another political imposition to our healthcare access.
Rose O'Hara Jolly is the director of Planned Parenthood Alliance Advocates in Alaska.
This case is baseless. There is no reason from a science standpoint, from a healthcare standpoint. It is simply about restricting access to abortion, even in states where abortion is still legal.
A statement from Alaska Attorney General Treg Taylor says he joined the lawsuit because the federal government allows the pill to be prescribed by mail, which means even people in states where abortion is illegal can get it. That's not the way most Alaskans get it. Planned Parenthood is the state's main prescriber, and it only does so in person. But the lawsuit would still make the pill unavailable in the state. If the lawsuit is successful, O'Hara Jolly said Planned Parenthood will still prescribe abortion pills, but it will have to use a slightly less effective drug if mifepristone is no longer legal.
Abortion will still be safe and legal in Alaska. We just will have one less method.
A decision in the case is expected as soon as the end of this week. With reporting from Izzy Ross in Dillingham, I'm Claire Strempel in Juneau.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, local communities want their voices heard when it comes to Arctic military expansion.
This is our table. Like, we have to make sure that we're there when it comes to policymaking decisions because there is activity happening.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The future looks bright because the University of Alaska is on a mission to empower Alaska. From drone piloting to vital climate research to critical mining solutions, the University of Alaska's three universities and their community campuses shape the jobs and careers that fuel the economy, creating a more empowered Alaska for all. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
Concerns about national security are heating up in the rapidly changing Arctic. In 2021, the U.S. Coast Guard opened a seasonal airbase in Kotzebue. The community was once home to a permanent Air Force station, and in part three of an ongoing series, Emily Schwing explores what it could mean for Kotzebue if the military expands its presence in northwest Alaska.
It's early August, and Kotzebue's commercial chum salmon fishery is in full swing. Boats line up to offload catch at a small dock on the edge of Kotzebue Sound. Nate Koch manages Arctic Circle Wild Seafoods, a small fish processor here.
I came to Kotzebue when I was 21 years old, so it was certainly a culture shock to me to some degree.
Born and raised in Hawaii, Koch says he never considered a move to Alaska until the Air Force stationed him here in the 1970s.
When someone from the outside comes in, they really need to embrace whatever the culture is where they're going and not try to push themselves in the door to change that.
Kotzebue's Air Force Station, the one that brought Koch to town, closed in 1983. Today, it functions as a long-range radar site. In the years since, Koch married into an Inupiaq family and built up a long resume of work within the community, including 27 years on the city council. He says if the military ever decided to resurrect a base here, the community would need to be involved.
So it's taken time for me to even learn that, what the culture really is in the community. I mean, the Native community, you know, what are their values? What are their needs? You know, I'm an outsider coming in. What do I need to do to be accepted? So that's what I think has to happen no matter what, because if that doesn't happen that way, then there's going to be a negative impact.
In recent years, more fighter jets have been based in Alaska. Cold weather training for soldiers here has increased, and an effort to provide the U.S. Coast Guard with a new state-of-the-art icebreaker is underway. Russia lies about 250 miles west of Kotzebue, and conflict with Ukraine has fueled more discussion about whether a more permanent military presence along Alaska's west coast is both needed and warranted.
More than 50,000 Americans live in the Arctic.
In a video posted to Twitter last fall, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken included national security in Alaska's Arctic region as one of four main pillars in a new national security strategy for the Arctic.
We have no higher priority than defending our country and our people. And security in the Arctic is key to that.
This is our table. Like, we have to make sure that we're there when it comes to policymaking decisions, because there is activity happening.
Koluk Carvalho is the vice president of lands for NANA, one of the largest Alaska Native corporations in the state. She's also a member of the U.S. Arctic Research Commission.
People can think of the Arctic as this pristine place where there's no activity happening, and that might be relatively true on the U.S. side. It's not as much activity, but on the Russian side there is, and all of our food resources go over there and come back. So it's all one environment. There's a lot of risk associated with it, and so how do we make sure we're at the table to define what it looks like?
In recent years, the Arctic has seen a drastic increase in industrial marine traffic in the region. As a self-described coastal Inupiaq, Carvalho is worried. Whether for commerce or a beefed-up military presence, she says an increase in industrial marine traffic is likely to impact the marine mammals and fish that provide a sustained food source for the people who live here.
When you're harvesting, when you're participating in these activities, this is how you learn our culture and our language. This is how it's passed down generation to generation because of the close relationship with the land and the water. It's a primary means not only to provide sustenance for ourselves and our people and our communities, it's also a primary means for our culture to continue.
Carvalho and I sit out on a seawall built more than a decade ago to protect Kotzebue from the impacts of a changing climate. Coastal erosion caused by rising seas and increasingly rough storms. Overhead, small commuter planes come and go from the nearby airport.
Are you concerned about how, like, just even here in Kotzebue, like, if there is a more permanent Coast Guard presence, or, you know, they do put in a naval base here, or, how that might change the fabric of the community a little bit?
I think every community worries about that, but this community is not unfamiliar with it, right? We've had a base here in the past. Certainly there's always that risk of the community changing. So it's how we interact with that change that's really important, right? And we don't know that there'll be a base here. You know, the tools and types of infrastructure needed to be present here have really changed over time.
Currently, a military buildup is just a discussion. And while shipping traffic in the Arctic is increasing, it can feel far away. Kotzebue is set back from the open Chukchi Sea by nearly 70 miles of shallow, protective water in Kotzebue Sound.
And now I'm just sitting. That's all right.
What's happening here now is a successful chum fishery.
They're having a lot of fun.
85-year-old elder James McClellan is in his Jeep, parked on the beach, peering through binoculars, scanning for boats fully loaded with fish.
Just like living from the country, that's all.
Yeah.
It's good. Keep you healthy. Last night I had some our salmon. I fried some. Oh, it was good. Fried salmon and fried potatoes and onions. And boy, it was good.
I bet. That sounds really good.
Yeah.
What he can't see with binoculars is beyond the sound. A growing traffic jam of industrial ships, a potential for conflict with a foreign neighbor, and the unknown impacts of a changing climate on food resources, including the chum salmon. In Kotzebue, I'm Emily Schwing.
This ongoing series is made possible through a grant from the Climate Justice Resilience Fund. The UPIT School District is hoping for state support to restore running water to the school in the village of Tuluksac up the river from Bethel. The community relies on the school for a lot of things, and it has not been easy since the water system went down. KYUK's Francisco Martinez-Cuello reports.
The nearly 300 people residing in Tuluksac are waiting for help for the school. Tuluksac is not a city. 84% of its people identify as Alaska Native, and half the population lives in what is defined as poverty. They have been without access to running water from their well since February 9th. The water line has leaks, and they can't find the leaks. They have to haul the water.
And that's really a tragedy for the entire village, because not only do we serve children lunches, but we serve elders breakfast and lunch as well.
That's Carrie Del Signore, the school principal. KYUK News followed up with her and Superintendent Scott Ballard.
We have to have water to feed our kids. We need a safe place for the kids to go to school. You know, they need to be able to shower at the school. The teachers need to be able to shower and teacher housing. All of those things are dependent upon this system that's just barely operating.
Teachers in Tuluksac are also forced to do more with less. They're overworked, too.
And we have to make sure that we've got people who can pump water, which means that our teachers are often working now 7 days a week because they're assisting still with the pumping water or opening the building or assisting getting the pumps running or making sure valves are, you know, open or closed to ensure that the water system works. And so teachers are now having to become experts in water management.
The school district has purchased two new 500-gallon holding tanks, Del Signore said, which provides more holding capacity. But they can only transport 200 gallons of water at a time from the village water plant over to the school in the back of a two-wheel drive pickup truck. A two-wheel drive pickup truck is not optimal, especially during the winter months in the YK Delta region.
The other day, we had to stop hauling water because we had issues getting the truck backed up the hill to the water plant because we don't have a four-wheel drive truck to do that. So, you know, if we can't get a permanent solution with someone coming out there, then we're going to look at needing funds to buy a four-wheel drive truck to continue hauling water.
To make matters worse, the village generator has gone down a number of times due to lack of fuel, and the school district responded by providing fuel.
The community is challenged with having enough fuel. We've given, you know, we have an agreement with them to provide them with fuel because they don't have enough fuel. And then our vehicles are run down and barely limping along because we haven't had the funds because of flat funding from the state of Alaska for school districts.
Ballard says they can't find the leak in the water line, and neither can the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation. The water line runs from the well to the pump house over to the school roughly 3/4 of a mile. They don't have the equipment or the resources.
The only people that could come in right now and find that leak would be through the resources of the federal government or the state government to come in and do that.
Del Signore agrees.
It would be great to have a state of emergency declared so that we could bring in National Guard or someone else who has the resources to come in and locate the leak, dig it up and fix it. Those are things that the village does not have the infrastructure, the materials, the equipment to do at this time. The school district does not have that equipment or the resources to do that.
So far, no assistance has arrived. Students have been on minimum days. But with generator issues, homes are cold too. No water means less hand washing, which is bad public health, making people susceptible to illnesses, particularly respiratory, skin, and gastrointestinal infections. This impacts student athletes and extracurricular activities, which affects student mental health as well.
With no heat in your house, so we've got kids that, you know, are struggling to sleep because they're cold. When we can't provide meals, those kids, many of them don't eat. The fishing has been down. There's just a lot going on in the village, and they depend on the school. So, yes, their mental health and the teacher's mental health is affected because we want to provide these things, and it's difficult not to be able to do that.
Until the state responds, teachers in Tuluksac will continue to haul water and make it through the school day. And the question still hangs, Would a situation like this have remained without intervention for this long in any of Alaska's cities? In Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training to provide jobs right here at home. ConocoPhillips Alaska.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, delivering digital banking options at your fingertips. First National Bank Alaska, 100 years shaping tomorrow. Learn more at fnbalaska.com.
And by
Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
There have been several wolf sightings in the city of Fairbanks. Videos of a lone wolf have been posted on social media, and Alaska Department of Fish and Game Fairbanks area biologist Tony Hollis is tracking the sightings.
We have one confirmed wolf that's come into town. It's been on the Chena River by Illinois Street and the Old Steese Highway, and then it's been on Noyes Slough as far over as College Road.
Hollis says the animal seen in images and video posted on social media appears to be a young male.
Which kind of makes sense. This time of year, it's the breeding season for wolves. The young males in the packs, the yearlings and two-year-old, often leave packs, strike out on their own, look for mates, and make their own pack. And so that's a pretty likely scenario.
Hollis says wolves are often seen in Fairbanks' outlying neighborhoods, but it's rare for one to be spotted inside city limits. He suspects the young wolf inadvertently wandered into the city.
Traveling down the Chena River, and then all of a sudden he's in town and not really sure what to do about it. Maybe he's okay with it at this point.
As of yesterday, Hollis had not received any reports of the wolf causing problems, but cautions people to be careful.
Because there's a chance that eventually he will do something, take somebody's pet or, you know, potentially worse.
Hollis says Fish and Game is keeping tabs on the situation.
We don't have a plan on right now, a target on him just to go kill him. But if he keeps hanging around and causing trouble, then that might be what we have to do.
Hollis notes that it's illegal for the public to harass wildlife and that firing guns and trapping are not permitted inside city limits. The Anchorage Assembly voted unanimously Tuesday to make city financial transactions and contracts available online. The move comes amid concerns from Assembly members about the amount of time it's taken them to get financial information through records requests to the Bronson administration. Assembly Vice Chair Chris Constant says the financial information should be public and easily accessible. He introduced the ordinance passed Tuesday night that directs the city to create an online checkbook similar to a tool used by the state.
Records that are public like this should be made public by default and not by request, because we've seen of late that certain documents that should take 15 to 20 minutes to find in the municipal records are taking weeks and months.
Mayor Dave Bronson expressed support for the creation of an online checkbook during Tuesday's meeting.
The execution of it might be a little complex in the very near term. I think it's an IT issue right now. But again, we obviously support this.
The ordinance directs the city to establish the online checkbook before January 1st of next year. Creating the checkbook is anticipated to cost the city less than $30,000. The child care crisis in Sitka is not just about a lack of places to enroll a child or a lack of money. It's also about finding someone reliable and qualified just to babysit. A group of middle school students is working to change that dynamic. 11 girls and 3 boys are taking a 15-hour babysitting certification course offered by 4-H through the University of Alaska Cooperative Extension Service. KCAW reporter at large Carrie Sagel joined the students as they studied first aid, nutrition, discipline, entertainment, and business management, and sent this audio postcard.
Is this raspberry flavored biscotti?
Yes, it is.
My name is Annette Evans. I'm the Ventures Child Care Coordinator. Thank you for coming. I'm excited that we get to share a program with you, and I just want you to know that I'm really proud of you all for taking this class. I'm happy to hear that Sitka has someone like Jasmine in the 4-H to put on a class like this for you all?
My name's Everett Woodcock.
What kind of homework is involved in a babysitting class?
Well, last time we had a food practice, so we had to draw out a meal and show, like, the My Plate, all the nutritions in it. And I put instructions on the back on how to make it, so.
What kind of food did you make or plan for?
I did chicken quesadillas topped with, like, lettuce and tomatoes and stuff.
So my name's Paul. I work in the emergency room, and also I run on the ambulance at the fire department as a volunteer, and I teach advanced life support, basic life support, pediatric advanced life support.
So my name is Bella, and I'm taking this class to kind of learn and get more experience with babysitting.
Have you babysat before?
Yes, I am currently babysitting a 7-year-old.
What do you think is the most important thing you've learned so far?
Probably responsibility and how important that is while taking a babysitting job.
Diaper rash. Who has seen diaper rash? You've seen diaper rash? Awesome. What do you do for diaper rash?
Apply cream.
That's right. You apply cream to diaper rash. Okay?
Maybe when I'm done with this, I'll tell you. Oh, I think I know. But I won't do it right now.
Next, scan the chest for 5 to 10 seconds, checking for breathing. If the person is not breathing normally or is only gasping, he needs CPR.
I am Nova Schmidt.
And what led you to take this class?
I am taking this class because I really wanted to learn about, like, responsibilities and how to entertain them, because I would like to start babysitting.
Have you babysat before?
No, I haven't babysat before.
And do you have a babysitting job lined up?
Not yet.
How do you play this game?
Wait, I think I won because I get 3 in a row, I think.
Actually, my first job in childcare was here at Baranoff in the what was then called Latchkey. It's this program. It's now called Ventures. So I started out in Ventures when I was 17, 18 years old as a paid job. Went off to college knowing that I wanted to be a teacher and found a Montessori approach to education and pursued my Montessori teaching certification.
I did a way to get 4 in a row. That was pretty cool. Wow.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Jeremy Shea and Wesley Early in Anchorage, Claire Strempel in Juneau, Izzy Ross in Dillingham, Emily Schwing in Kotzebue, Francisco Martinez Cuello in Bethel, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Carrie Sagel in Sitka. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Madeline Rose is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Support for public radio comes from the communities we serve. Whether you give as an individual member or through your business, know that your contribution makes possible programming that informs, inspires, and entertains. We thank you for the role you play in your public radio station. Ensure the vitality of public radio by including it in your estate planning. Together, we build a sustainable future for quality media. Thank you. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.